Hey guys, welcome to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't just talk about overcoming obstacles, we talk about who we become because of them. Because the truth is, life doesn't ask permission before it changes everything. Diagnosis, a loss, a phone call, a moment, and suddenly you're standing in a chapter that you never would have written for yourself. Most people spend their lives trying to avoid the suffering. But what if the suffering isn't the thing that destroys us? What if it's resistance? What if peace isn't found after the storm, but inside of it? So today we're going to talk about caregiving, grief, intuition, mortality, faith, and how to find joy when life gives you every reason not to. Today's guest is Michael Rizzo. He is the author of Finding Joy in Daily Living. He's a former golf instructor, caregiver, cancer survivor, and someone who learned how to live from deep peace after walking through unimaginable challenges. Michael, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat today. I'm really looking forward to your story. Take me back to the moment you collapsed while you were caring for your wife, when everything changed at once. What's happening inside of you?
Well, when I was caretaking Nance at this point for about 7 months, and we have terrazzo floors. So, for whatever reason, we didn't. Sorry about that.
You're okay.
This is part of what you were talking about earlier.
The real
You don't
life, it's
have.
happening.
It happens and you just respond to what's happening. I had a flat tire the other day, totally out of the blue. Nail in my tire. I didn't worry about it. I just went from there. So back to Nancy. We're lying. She's going to the restroom and I was sliding her across the terrazzo floor on our chair that had pads on it. And she would have to go to the bathroom 20 times a day
Wow.
throughout the 24-hour period, every 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And after all these months of caretaking, I had already pretty much stopped teaching golf because I couldn't take care of her and do that at the same time. So as I was taking her out of the bedroom, the pain in my stomach was so severe, I just collapsed to the floor.
Oh.
And I had these sharp pains like knives in my stomach. And I didn't even believe I could get her to the bathroom. But the truth is, I had to. So I did. When I take her to the bathroom, I had to lift her, I had to care, she had no strength to do anything. So that I called a good friend of mine who's one of my clients, and Pam was a former Vietnam nurse. And she said, Michael, you have to call 911, go to an emergency room immediately. So we both went. Nance ended up in one hospital room, I ended up in another. So I hadn't talked to her now for a while because she was in another room. And when the one doc came in to examine me, he asked me some questions and said, "You have a hernia. We need to operate on it." And I had had triple hernia surgery back about 2 years before. And I was like, "Well, do I have to do it?" And he said, "It's life-threatening. You need to do this." I said, "Okay." So then a surgeon comes in. This is now 3, 4, 5 hours go by. They've been in, they check this, they check that. And then my surgeon, I met Dr. Lowry, he comes in and says, now it's maybe 11 at night by this time. We went on around dinner time. And he said, we're just going to, everything's going to be fine. Someone will count back from 100 and you'll go out and you won't really remember probably anything. Then you'll wake up and we'll tell you what happened. So after I wake up, they tell me that I had a femoral hernia, I had a bowel obstruction. I had intestinal infection and I had something called mesothelioma, which is cancer of the peritoneum. Didn't even know what the heck that was. And mesothelioma is not like a normal tumor. You can just go operate and cut it out because it's literally thousands of tiny microscopic tumors that attach to asbestos. And I'm like, where did that come from? So anyway, that led to being in a hospital room, surgeries, 12 days. Nance is at home now. She went back. And I had a friend, thank God, who hired some caretakers. That whole thing was a nightmare. But I get home And then I can't take care of her. She has caretakers. We're wondering how we can pay for all this. As time went by, about a month later, I was back teaching again, albeit sitting in a chair, because I left the hospital 116 pounds, no physical strength, and I'm 5'10". So that was kind of that was that stage anyway.
Wow, this is incredible. And I just want to say, I'll speak to the testament of love right there, because you're a walking time bomb with all of this stuff inside of you, and you're still caring for your wife before, everything kind of collapsed. So it's wild what our bodies can handle. And so you were able to still take care of her when yours was essentially failing you. What did caregiving really teach you about love, Mike?
Well, the one thing about, I feel strongly when you make a decision to do something and it's a knowing or from your heart that you just do it.
Yeah.
You don't complain about it. So once I made up that my mind to do that, I learned a lot about caretaking, caregiving, and how incredibly stressful it is. Anything I read on it later on was, this is really hard work to do it. It's emotionally tough, physically tough. I think in that 7 months leading up to the caretakers that we hired, I didn't sleep more than 2 hours straight for about a year. And that's because she was up to the bathroom all the time. So I don't know how I didn't get sick. I mean, I did get sick,
Right.
but I mean sick,
It
colds,
caught up to
viruses.
you.
Yeah, it caught
Yeah.
up to me. And then it was just a whirlwind. After that, we didn't even know Nance was diagnosed with ALS immediately. It took time. We went to one neurologist. The neurologist said, I don't know what it is. And he was one of the best in the area. And so then it was, we couldn't see him again for 3 months. By the time we went to see him, Nance always had a way of making an excuse. I think she didn't really want to know what it was. I didn't know, she didn't know. So we would cancel the appointment. Then, when I tried to reschedule, it was another 2 or 3 months. Finally, I said, well, he doesn't know. Let's find another neurologist. Go to that guy, never saw him one time. And then we're supposed to go see him again. And Nance finds a way to cancel again. And then we schedule again and cancels again. And she canceled 5 times in a row. I said, Nance, we are not canceling one more time. And I scheduled the sixth time, and they weren't going to take her. They were going to release her and say, we're not taking her. And I went in and said, what's up? What's the deal? Because I had a good relationship with Ashley, who was the front office girl. And she's kind of saying, well, the manager, because all these cancellations, didn't want to have Nance be a patient anymore.
Okay.
And then I said, what's up? I'm pretty intuitive. I said, what's up? I said, what's the story? What's going on? And she said, the manager is the neurologist's wife. And so there was something about ego with the wife that she wanted to be. I don't know what her issue was, but I went in and I said, I'm going to talk to her. I finally got in there. She's not in. She's not in. I said, let me know when she's in. When I finally talked to her, I said, look it, we don't know what my wife has. This is serious. You need to let her come and see Dr. Obi and find out what the heck's going on. We finally did. She went through severe tests that were excruciatingly painful for me to watch. And then after the testing, he said she has ALS and doesn't have long to live.
Wow. What? Because I feel like this is hard. I mean, it's hard. Obviously, it's still, I mean, your heart is in this. What do you think was the harder experience for you, Mike? Is it the diagnosis of your cancer or the knowing of what's to come and watching your wife decline?
The diagnosis of my cancer was to me like somebody said, you have a cold. I
Okay.
didn't consider it as I'm going to die.
An issue.
Even though with mesothelioma, all the research I did and what they said and all that pretty much was if you don't have medical treatment, which I didn't and I haven't for over 2 years, they said life expectancy 8 months. If you have medical treatment with the most advanced stuff, probably a year and a half to 2 years. I can't even guarantee that. And the surgery was, you don't want to know how severe the surgery would have been. I just said, not going there. So I found a book. The guy's healed the same cancer I had for 27 years. I said, if Paul Krause did it, I can do it because I have a strong will
Yeah.
and have been doing that ever since. It was definitely harder. Watching her.
I mean, you're helpless at that point, and this is someone that you love, and there's not a lot you can do during that time. How did you, I guess, like, not only just accept the reality, but find the strength to be the support for her?
One thing that made it easier was that Nance and I are both meditators. We're on a spiritual path. And, you know, no matter what religion people follow or spiritual path, they usually have pretty strong beliefs about who it is. It could be Buddha, it could be Jesus, it could be Krishna, it could be Allah, it doesn't matter. And so, because we have strong belief in this, and I knew from past experience with her, first off, she was highly intuitive, she was never wrong. If she was ever questioning something and I saw her in her mind, which happened about maybe once every 2 years, then I'd say, Nance, you're in your mind. You're making me crazy. Other than that, she was spot on 100% of the time and anything intuitive. So she also, and most people probably will never have an experience like this. She was in the back room. I was in the, this was before there was any sickness, falls, et cetera. So some years before, she was in the back room. I was in the hallway, and I'd been looking for something, and I still to this day can't remember what it was exactly I was looking for. It could have been a blanket, I don't know what. And she came walking in through the kitchen, and I looked at her, and I said, "This is not Nancy Riso, my wife. Like it was her body, but something was way different." And she said to me, "My name is Ariel, and I'm Nancy's higher self. I'm not supposed to be here, and I can't stay long." And there was this complete reverence. That I felt looking at this person who was in a physical body, but not at all who she normally is, her personality, in other words. And then she said, "That thing you're looking for," again, it might have been a blanket, I can't remember. She said, "It's in the meditation room up in the closet on the top left." And then I walked in the meditation room. Looked up and there it was. I don't even remember if she stayed more than a minute or a minute and a half. And then Nance was back her normal personality again. That was the only time that her higher self ever showed itself. So once I knew that, I know we're not our bodies. Everybody who's a meditator, who goes deeper and deeper, can understand we're not our bodies. We die, there's the body, we cremate it, we bury it, right? And I knew that intellectually, but I didn't know it.
And I think that very much aligns with a lot of beliefs. In my beliefs, I have a relationship with Christ, and it's the same truth. We're not our bodies.
Right.
We are supernatural spiritual beings. So I think, that's an incredible awareness. And I think if more people kind of woke up to the idea that we're more than our bodies, their decisions in life would be different. We would go for our potential. We would, enhance the peace we have here. We wouldn't overthink so many little things, and we wouldn't distract ourselves on phones 24 hours a day. What did your wife's ALS journey teach you about the human spirit?
Well, she was a really strong person. Spiritually, she was, I mean, she went through hell and back from childhood. And I said, if she can go through physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, husband violent, violent father, on and on and on and on. And she can get through all of that and never identify herself as this is where I'm going to stay. And she kept taking another step, another step, another step, another step. That alone told me this was an incredible woman who is here to teach me, other people, that there's way more than the personality, even though she had her distinct personality and I did too. We all do. But then when you see beneath that and you come from your heart, that's when you can start to open up to us understanding that we're all the same underneath. But if we only look at the surface, our looks, our clothes, our jobs, etc., there'll never be peace on the planet. There'll always be wars and fighting and greed and blah blah, because people are so much in here instead of meaning in their mind, instead of being beyond the mind into the soul, into the spirit. That's where all the connection happens. It doesn't happen up here.
That makes a lot of sense, Mike. What does living intuitively actually look like on a day-to-day for you?
It's so much fun because God, I don't care what word people use. Some people are offended by saying God. I don't care. It's an easy thing to use, right? Once you trust God for everything, I'll tell you what happened yesterday. I started to mention it. It wasn't yesterday, it was 3 4 days ago. I had a full day of golf lessons because I'm pretty much done by the end of this month. I'm just cleaning up a few students. And I had 7 hours worth of lessons. I had two classes, one private in between. I walk out, I got basically 20 minutes to get to the course. I have 23 minutes. And I look at my back tire and it's got a nail in it flat. And I laughed spontaneously. I didn't get upset. I didn't say, you can't believe it. I looked at it and I laughed, like, okay, God, what next? What do I got to do next? Okay, I better call. I better call call and get an Uber first thing. So I did that. Then I said, what next? Let's see, I got to call my students, make sure that first class knows I'm not going to be on time, 15 minutes late, because Uber was coming pretty quick. Then I got to call AAA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then I had to, let's see, I had to call the cat sitter and say, can you come and take care of Beat and Baji? Because I'm not coming back and forth. So she was able to do it. And then all these pieces fit together. And I never felt strain or stress. I just felt like I flow. When I'm interviewing these things, with you or whoever is interviewing, it's a total gift to be able to share with people, to learn from people, to share from whatever I might have learned. And every moment can be like that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You just say, I don't see this as good or bad that happened. I just observe it and go, as you said earlier, we don't know where it leads. We don't know where any of it leads. You don't need to know. Because I don't care where it leads, I just do the next thing I'm guided to do, the next thing. And I love that freedom of not having to control anything. Controlling is an illusion. There's only one thing I tell people, Brandon, that people can control. Decisions, period. That's it.
You're right. Decision and perspective, I feel like, is your I love you, that you share that story, because how many people really, they spill the coffee on themselves on the way to work, or they lose their keys, and even I don't know what happened with my husband the other day. Something, oh, his the his car didn't oh He lost the keys to his car at work. That's what I remember. And he gets off really late. Like, I'm asleep when he gets off at midnight. My phone rings at 12:30 because he's on emergency bypass. I've been asleep for 2 hours. I answer it, and he's like, "I need you to come pick me up." And he starts to get upset, and I'm like, "You have no idea, like, God's favor. It works in our lives no matter what. So maybe you were going to hit a deer. Maybe someone was going to hit you. Like, the perspective is, it's not a big deal.
Right.
It's so what? I woke up in the middle of the night. Thank God I answered the phone so you didn't have to walk, right?
Exactly.
So it everything worked out, and it really is just that perspective of, like, is it worth getting upset? And I think so many people are reactive, and I think, society has kind of created that monster of
Yeah.
reactivity, and it takes years off your life. And I think if people
Yeah.
could get to where you're at with this perspective, it changes everything. And not being reactive, I could feel years coming back to my life when I'm not freaking out about everything. I love what you said about control being an illusion. I don't think I've ever heard it phrased that way. So, Mike, I absolutely love that. Control is an illusion. That's huge. I feel like that's a whole other podcast episode in and of itself.
Course, and what happens is people try to control things that are beyond their control, and that's delusional. But they don't know that it's beyond their control. That's why they try to control it.
And they make themselves crazy. I call that,
Exactly.
the tornado energy. Just, you're on the
Yeah.
loop, and your brain gets used to the loop, and so it's all just it forms a pattern, and it's not impossible to get off, but it does take a big level of awareness.
Yeah.
How has your understanding of death changed through this experience?
It really didn't change that much because I already knew we're not our bodies. I think once I was got the cancer, I said, "Well, let's see." I'm looking at myself in the mirror, going, "You were a 180-pound athlete back in high school and college. You were strong, you were quick, you were athletic, you were good looking. Now you're 116 pounds." It's not who you are.
And it,
That external is never who you are. It's never who you are. Look at Stephen Hawking. The guy couldn't talk, he couldn't move. And look at the brilliance of his mind. He still kept going and going and going.
I mean, you're an incredible inspiration to anyone, and I think just the influence you have of the testament of, like, that doesn't define who you are. And two things can be true, right? There's a part of you that grieves the version of who you were when you were strong and athletic, but there's also the part of you that can respect that you do know that we're more than the bodies. I mean, our only guarantee in this life, the only thing that's ever promised to us, is that we are going to die.
Exactly.
That's it. And so the question is, I feel like so many people spend their life afraid of death, and they don't really live. And I think once you face that mortality, here you are living. You're living in the peace, you're enjoying the moments. I very much align with you. Like, I love getting to sit down and meet new people every single day, and I get to hear these incredible stories, and I get to share just human vulnerability with a beautiful audience. And what, I get to already celebrate the impact that our conversation has. I get to do that over and over. It's a surprise every day. I'm like, I don't know
Yeah,
who I get to meet. We
I
didn't know
know.
each other, Mike.
Of
I
course.
messaged you. I'm like, come on my show. This is the first time we met. And this is part of that human experience and connection. So I just do think it's incredible that you're on that path of realizing there's so much more to us than our bodies. And this goes for everyone. It's not even about a cancer diagnosis or being sick. It's people who don't do things because they're overweight or, like we put so much on our physical.
I
They
know.
think I'm not pretty enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not skinny enough. It's always, we're just never enough.
I know.
Like,
You had just mentioned about death, and I'll go a step further. Even I think Einstein or whoever it was that said it, energy cannot be created nor destroyed.
ever.
You can't, we can't die, but in the human body, we have to identify it as we're not here anymore. But the body, of course, we know isn't, it's not the deal. Because once we left, I like giving a simple example. I say, if I'm talking with somebody in person and I drop to the ground and the ambulance comes and goes, he's dead. Well, the body, it starts to deteriorate, starts to decompose immediately. So what kept it alive? That's the soul, the spirit, the energy, whatever. So that's who I was. Now that energy can't die. By the way, this lamp right here next to me, when I do this and I turn the light off, did the electricity disappear? It's still there. As soon as I turn it on, it comes back. So the soul has to go somewhere, spirit, whatever you want to call it. It has to go something. That's God's deal. And then it goes where it goes, and then it's beyond our comprehension. But if we understand that, we don't have a fear of death. Although I would say this to people. If I were, when I was a kid, I could have been 12 or 13. I remember saying to myself, I'm not sure if there's like heaven and hell, even though I grew up Catholic Italian. I'm not sure if there's heaven or hell. But if I'm wrong about there being hell, I want to make sure I err on the side of thinking there is one, so I don't do anything to get me to go that way.
Right.
I'd rather err on that and be wrong, right, than to be just saying, oh, there's only a heaven. How many people I meet like that, and I go, there's, if there's light and dark in our world, right? You're wearing a dark shirt, I'm wearing a light shirt. We've got, right, different colors. Well, you got different energies that go one way or the other. Move toward the light energies. Don't move toward the dark energies. That means friendships,
Right.
everything, movies you watch, et cetera, et cetera.
No, I definitely love that. And it's kind of the same conversation in A Journey with Christianity when I'm telling people about Jesus and they're just like, it's ridiculous. And I think what you may think it's ridiculous. What do I have to lose by following a Bible that's going to make me a better person, that makes me
Sure.
rethink how I treat people, that opens up my perspective? Like, what do I have to lose? And at the
Right.
end, like, what's the cost? So if it was true, my ass is going to be on fire, and if it's not true, what did I lose from believing in something bigger than myself and working to become a better person and giving people that comfort,
Sure.
it's and that was kind of the beginning. Now, my relationship has since solidified, and to me there is no other option. There is no, he's there, whether you believe it or not, he's there, and he has a hand in your life, and we're all a part of this beautiful tapestry. Like, every single one of us matters. Every single voice matters. Every single story matters. And I think the more we can share that awareness and bring people just, I guess, to consciousness, Mike, because everyone
Exactly.
is so distracted and in the clouds. And can we just be human for a minute? We chose the meat suit. We're here for the experience. Like, you came here for this experience. You knew it was going to be hard, and you knew you were going to remember who you were. You knew that. You knew that you would be able to be the mic that's gonna show people the light, that's gonna show them what peace is like, that's gonna show them that creating a life with intention and trusting your intuition is a gift.
Hey, Jesus was an example for people, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was an example. He didn't walk, he didn't go out and say, hey, give me the finest garments to wear. Right? You know,
Exactly.
those guys, they knew around him because they knew he was God realized, right? This, and that's of course why he was a threat. Anybody who is high spiritual and influences large numbers of people is going to get attacked.
They don't get the platform. They
No.
just don't get the
And
platform.
for maybe for another, maybe it is your platform or won't be. But since I started, I found a product that cures cancers, right?
Wow.
Cures cancers.
Yeah.
I've been taking it. And I tell people I'm going to get attacked left and right when I
Oh, yeah.
start talking to people about it. I do. I've already referred my clients to it. I go, this, you have no idea how it got suppressed. Anyway, that's for another conversation.
Yeah. I'm so curious about that. I definitely want to talk about that because first of all, it's kind of completely a different package, but I've been an anti-vaxxer for 24 years. I have six kids. I trust in my intuition. My first daughter started having seizures after vaccinations. I'm like, something's wrong. I question the system and I've gotten hate for it for 24 years to just question the system. Then you start putting the pieces of the puzzle together to see what food they're feeding us, what they're saying is healthy, what they say is not good for us, and you realize that it's a big machine that wants
Yep.
to keep us sick, and it's terrifying. And I'm the bad guy because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a
Of
doctor. I'm spreading
course, right?
misinformation. Yes, and now I'm sure. Are you a doctor, Mike?
No, I'm not a doctor.
No, and people are going to attack you for that because how dare you know better?
Well,
But if you're taking something, you trust your intuition.
you know what's cool about it?
Yeah.
A lot of times with products from the past that have been like resurfaced, or people talk about it, they say, well, here's all these testimonials, and there are plenty of them in books, right? But I've spoken to three people who took this product from 10 to 36 years ago, still alive and healthy and no cancer.
Wow.
And they only took it for 4 to 12 months. I've been
Wow.
on it since January, 6 months, right? And I have one of the hardest cancers in the world to cure. Nobody, as far as I know, has ever totally cured mesothelioma. So I'm going to try to be the first. And then I'm going to go out and really, and by the way, all the things you talked about in this interview, everything you talked about is in my book. And I'm not saying it for people to buy my book. I don't care. But the fact that these principles are true, they have to be talked about by somebody like you or me who isn't afraid. Let's listen to Jane Fonda yesterday. She's out there, like rallying people together to stand up against the government and what people are trying to do to suppress freedom of speech. When I talk about this product, people are going to be, and they already are like, well, fortunately, I have good, great relationship with my clients. So when I speak, they listen. And then I go, you do what you want with it. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just going to guide. And it was already, the suppression of it was crazy. American Medical, FDA, they all buried it. They actually hired a federal judge to make it illegal to produce. Illegal. Crazy world. So I'm revitalizing it.
Yeah, I love that, and I definitely will help continue to share your message. Can you tell us about the product and can you share where
Sure.
people can find your book? We definitely want to plug the book because I think it'd be an important tool for people to have hands on.
Sure. The product is called ProtoCell, ProtoCell. There's only two places in the world you can get it. One is in Carolina, one's in Ohio. I tell everybody I talk to, my clients, people I meet in supermarket, just strike up conversation. Yeah, I have breast cancer, I have lung cancer, etc. I tell them, buy this book, Outsmart Your Cancer, by Tanya Harder Pierce, third edition. Get it on Amazon. It's $20. Read the 80 pages on Protocell, and your head will spin. And you'll go, first, how it happened. It was actually a man who was Christian, who believed in his dreams that God was speaking to him and said, you should go from engineering, which is what he wanted to go into, you should go into chemistry. Him going into chemistry led him to the next dream, which said you should serve humanity, which led to the next dream, which said you should find a cure for cancer. And he did. It took him 40 years.
Wow.
And then they suppressed it. He was giving it away. He said, I don't want to make any money. It's a gift from God. He didn't make a penny on it. And his other guy, who he brought in, said, this is too good. He had his own separate guy named Ed. Had his own business, and he took all the profits from his business and gave away tens of thousands of bottles healing people's cancer. And that's when they shut him down. Yeah, scary.
is scary. It's scary because I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory slash political podcast, and I talk about how many doctors have disappeared, how many whistleblowers, how many scientists,
Absolutely.
how many all of this, and it's all very questionable circumstances. But I think, the machine for decades, probably hundreds of years, I think it's the same people pulling the strings, and their pockets are very deep, and they live by a different set of rules. And we're experiments. They just
Yep.
experiment on us. And when someone wakes up to the experiment and has a different answer, they're silenced. So, yeah, I'm definitely praying for your journey because I think this is amazing. And I think this is a conversation that more people need to have. What is your book and where can people find that?
It's called Finding Joy in Daily Living. And it will most likely be out in August because I have decided to spend over a year on it so far. But it's already been to a publisher, it's already been back to me. There's different levels of editing. So probably mid-August, I'm shooting for. And it'll be available on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, et cetera. And
Perfect.
they can go to my website, which is findingjoydaily.com. You can actually read sample chapters on
That's amazing. I'll make sure that that's plugged into the show notes. So, Michael, this is the part of the episode where I'm going to tell you what I think makes you special. And it's not that you faced hardships, because the truth is, most people have.
Sure.
What makes you special is how you responded to it. You walked through caregiving, cancer, loss, uncertainty, and instead of becoming hardened by life, you became softer, more present, more peaceful, more grateful, and you've discovered something most people spend their entire lives searching for. Peace is not dependent on your external circumstances. You are showing people that it's a way of being, and helping people suffer less by showing them another path and being willing to have a voice for a healing that matters, that has been suppressed, to help people kind of unplug from everything meant to distract us and bring them back to themselves. I think that you're doing some incredible work. I think you are stewarding an incredibly beautiful God-given mission. I pray for you. God bless your journey and the strength it took to get through everything you've done. I think even just with your wife, you're helping to build an incredible legacy, on so many levels, not just as, someone who could speak to caretakers and help them feel relatable, but I mean, the love you had for her is still, it's a tangible thing. I could see that in our interview, and I think just carrying that light for her, and making the best of what you're facing, I think is incredible. To everyone listening, just slow down, take a breath, look around the people you love, look at the life you're living, even this moment right now, because the truth is, none of it is guaranteed. And that's exactly what makes it precious. So don't wait for life to become perfect before you allow yourself to experience the joy. Don't wait until the diagnosis is gone, or the stress is gone, or the problems are gone. Life is happening right now in this moment. God does not always remove the storm. Sometimes he's really just teaching us how to stand peacefully inside of it. So I'm calling you to be present and to be grateful and to remember that your mess is your message. Even the grief, even the diagnosis, even the seasons that nearly break you, those may become the exact things that help someone else find peace. If this episode spoke to you, please share it out. Help me get Mike's book out in the hands of people who need it. You guys get resourced with him. And if you're ready for the hot seat, I dare you to come tell me what makes you special. Mike, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat today. I'm honored that I got to spend this time with you, to meet you, and that we get to put your story and your message and your products out in the world.
Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate your time.